Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Merkel Media.
Good, everybody. This is Joel Thomas, and this is Free the Rabbits. And how are all the free range rabbits doing out there today? Listen, I know how many people follow the show. It's a good many of you that do. I could only imagine if right now, before the show even gets going, if you haven't done it already, go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify, go to YouTube, leave a 5-star review where you can, write a review where you can, or leave a comment where you can, and see what you can do to help the show grow even more than it already has. To everybody that's already done that, I really appreciate it. You know I love you guys. And guess what? If you haven't done it, I'll probably read your review or comment at the end of the show like I do every week. I really appreciate it, guys. Also, I got one more thing for you. I have a live event where I'll be speaking at the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree October 5th from 9 a.m. to about 7 p.m. I'll be one of the speakers there. I'll be talking about some of my dogman trips, my Bigfoot trips where I've gone out in the woods hunting for these cryptids, and I'll also be meeting with everyone that follows Free the Rabbits or any of the other shows I've been on. I'll be there with Cryptids of the Corn, Jake Dressel, B. Mills, John Hickenbottom, and guess who else is going to be there just hanging out and selling merch? Tony Merkel from The Confessionals. The whole Merkel Media crew is going to be there having a good time. All the tickets are sold out, guys. They were actually sold out before I even started this show. But this is going to be held at Ada War Memorial Park in Ohio. Ada, A-D-A. So it's going to be a huge event. So even if you can't come and listen to me speak, because all the tickets are sold out for that, you can still come hang out. There's going to be tons of events, tons of food, all kind of festivities going on the whole day, and you'll get to meet everybody and hang out with us. So if you can, come out to that, Ada, Ohio, at the War Memorial Park, October 5th. Love to see you there. But now, let's get into the show. What's good, everybody? This is Joel Thomas, and how are all the free range rabbits doing out there today? I hope all you guys are doing well. I can't wait to get into this episode this week. It's one that I'm a little personally invested in because of what I do at Merkle Media with Tony Merkle, Jack Merkle, Ward Heine, with all the films that we put out and all the documentary style expeditions that we go on. And as a matter of fact, the very first documentary that we ever did was called Expedition Dogman. You should see the poster behind me. It might be right behind my head or something like that if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble. But it was the first documentary that we did, and it was based around a story from a guy named Kyle from Kentucky. And we went deep into the Daniel Boone National Forest looking for the elusive dog man that attacked him. He actually saw it twice in his life, but the first time he saw it, it attacked him and his dogs. And we thought it was very important that we go to this area and see what we could drum up. We actually did drum up some pretty crazy stuff there. No dog man, but it was interesting nonetheless, but it got our minds thinking even more about what dog man actually is and the historical significance behind dog man. And that got me on a deep search over the past 2.5 years on what the connection could be with dog man and possibly biblical text, extra biblical text, mythology throughout history. We know of a lot of different cultures that have these dog-headed gods, and it really got my mind really wanting to understand what this phenomena actually is. And I'll be honest with you, the more I dig, the less I know about what this phenomena actually is. I don't know. I think there's definitely historical significance, which we're going to talk about today, a specific historical name for these dog-headed creatures, where they might have come from, you know, what I think that those could be. But I don't think that dog man's one particular thing. And you'll hear me say this a lot on the show when it comes to cryptids or extraterrestrials, ultra-terrestrials, subterrestrials. I don't think they're all one thing. And I think that if we try to pigeonhole these phenomena, cryptids, or whatever into one specific thing, I think we lose out on so many other aspects of what it could be. You'll find this in the crypto world a lot, where you've got people who only believe that these things are flesh and blood creatures, if they exist at all. And typically you'll hear it with Dogman and Bigfoot, and they'll say that they are some sort of missing link, or that they are a derivative from an animal from ancient times. And listen, I'm not going to disagree with that to a point. I think that there is maybe a version of these creatures that has existed for millions, billions of years. I don't put that out of the realm of possibility. And side note to any Christians listening right now, because I think on one of the first couple episodes I did, I had a few weren't very happy in the comments when I suggested millions and billions of years. They said, how could you be a Christian and believe that? Well, there is the old earth theory, and I'll say it's a theory because none of this stuff's really definable for any of us. It's just like trying to say that the earth is 6,000 years old. You can't prove it. You can say that, oh, I'm looking at the text and this is how I'm reading it and how that I'm translating it to believe this. And I don't have a problem with anybody that believes 6,000 years. Listen, if it ends up being 6,000 years, whoop-de-doo. Like, it doesn't change at all how we interact day to day and how we need to live our lives for the betterment of others. these are all theories, but I will say I've read a lot. And the more that I read, the more it seemed very plausible that the earth is far older than we think that it is. But that doesn't mean that God still didn't create it. And at the same time, it be billions of years old. I think it's highly plausible. And there are several texts within the Bible itself that when you dig into the Hebrew root words of what some of these texts mean, it actually expands your mind into being able to see a little bit differently about, hey, before Adam and Eve, there were civilizations. Before Adam and Eve, there was an original earth or earths. I mean, we could go all the way back. We don't know, right? The Sumerians is the oldest known text that we know about, right? And I say known text because I believe that there could possibly be other texts that are older than that that we don't know about. Because if there is a system in place globally to keep information away from us, why would they tell us about any texts that are older or that would go against what the Sumerians said or even line up more biblically to what's going on? That's that possibility I always throw out there when people try to throw historical text as like solid fact. I get it. Like, I'm all about historical text and I love the Sumerian stuff. And I think there's a lot of great stuff in there. And I think that they have some of the best texts that prove that old earth existed, that prove that there were civilizations of angels here and on other planets that had different hierarchies and systems very similar to what we have here on earth now, and that there could have been a pre-Adamite man as well. And that's a whole other rabbit hole. All those are other rabbit holes that I will definitely explore on this show at some point. As a matter of fact, if you want to hear me talk about old earth, just go to the confessionals and look up the episode Old Earth, Lucifer's Domain. I do like a 2.5 hour episode where I talk about a lot of those theories and ideas. And I've actually done way more research since then that has also opened my mind up to think that, man, this earth could have been way older than we think that it is, and it can fit within the biblical text. And I don't think that it doesn't. Now, if you don't believe that and you look at the Bible a certain way, cool. It doesn't change that you're not following your path or that I have to look at you in any kind of way, and vice versa. I think that I pinpoint Christians the most because when I am one and I can, so I'm able to pinpoint you guys and show you that, hey, there's like a jillion different denominations out there and everybody's fighting over who's got the real truth instead of trying to work together, right? You know, you can have a different opinion or a different line of theology than somebody else and you're both going to be all right in the end, right? I don't think that Christians really know that. It's like, even with the Nephilim theories, you'll find sects within Christianity that don't believe the Nephilim existed at all. They will totally negate those texts, or they'll try to translate them differently than what the Hebrews actually translated them to. Again, I don't look at them any kind of bad kind of way. They're probably good people. Who cares? And then you got sects within the idea of Nephilim ideology that fight over what the Nephilim were. You know, I've done some deep dives on if Nephilim could be good, and I've done episodes about that. I've explained thoroughly how it's possible, and people get mad about it. Why? I don't know why people get mad about it. Why does it matter to your personal life? But people get so deep rooted in ideologies when it comes to biblical text, and honestly, any kind of religious text, not just biblical. People get super angry and vehement because I feel that people think when you challenge something they believe that you're attacking them personally, and that's not it at all. I think that we're supposed to explore the possibilities of something different. That's how I have a great time in life, is exploring all these different, interesting texts and possibilities. So I leave my mind open to the unexplained. I leave mine open to what's possible. And that also draws us back in. I'm reeling you back in, guys, I promise, to Dog Man, because I don't think that Dog Man's this one specific thing. I think we could line it up to be something metaphysical / supernatural, which we could go down the rabbit hole of the Fae folk or demonic entities that could manifest to look a certain way. We could even go into lycanthropy and the possibility that people could change into these things, or at least visually to a person that's looking at that person with the connection to some of these negative entities could put up the facade that they look like some sort of wolfman, dogman, werewolf, and you might see that in the woods, and it's more like some sort of metaphysical projection, right? That's a possibility too. It could be that some of these dogmen have been around for, like I said, millions, billions of years, and it could be that some of them are the derivative of the fallen entities intermingling with not only humans that we know about, but also in the Book of Enoch, it talks about them intermingling with animal kind. And I'll read that passage out of Enoch for you guys. It's Book of Enoch, chapter 7. We'll start with verse 1. And all the others together with them took unto themselves wives, and each chose for himself one. And they began to go in unto them and to defile themselves with them. And they taught them charms and enchantments and the cutting of roots, and made them acquainted with plants. That acquainted with plants, when you look into that in the deeper text, they actually were genetically modifying the plants. Now think about that. Think about what we're doing now with genetically modified fruit, vegetables, and even meat. So I think we're kind of moving back into that era before the flood. And I don't know how close we are to that, guys, but I do think that we are trying to at least emulate what was happening before the flood with the technology. And they became pregnant, the women, and they bare great giants whose height was 3,000 ells, who consumed all the acquisitions of men. And when men could no longer sustain them, the giants turned against them and devoured mankind. And they began to sin against birds and beasts and reptiles and fish, and to devour one another's flesh and drink the blood. And the earth laid accusation against the lawless ones. So they weren't just getting with the human women, they were also getting with animal kind. And that's where the idea that some of these cryptids are Nephilim based. And I know some guys, I think they're all a derivative of the Nephilim. I don't buy into that wholly. I do think it's very possible that some of these are Nephilim based, which would be the intermingling of some sort of fallen entity and animals, but I don't necessarily think all. What's funny is people are like, these monstrosities, these evil things, like, how do you know that they were created to be evil? How do you know God didn't even create them, right? Like, I think that's something that people aren't thinking about, especially when we're talking about millions and billions of years. We don't know what was before Adam. We don't know what lasted. May have went underground during that flood. If you ever remember, you know, when Noah got off the ark, the rainbow was shown to him as a promise that God would never destroy the earth by water again. It never said that he hadn't before that. So if we're going to at least open our minds up to the idea of old earth, you have to open your mind up to the fact that there was a flood before Adam and Eve. And I'm not going to go through all those texts today, guys, because we're here to talk about Dogman. But again, you can go back and listen to that particular episode of The Confessionals, or you can just wait for me to talk about it here on the show, because I will promise that I'll do another episode about old earth, because I've done way more research since then. But that's the idea, that there was possibly at least one other flood before the deluge that Noah got on the ark with his family with, that there was at least one, maybe more, if we want to look at the possibility that the earth has been reborn more than a couple of times, which, you know, again, I'm open to the idea. There's plenty of mythologies and texts out there that suggest something like that. I'm not saying that I know for a fact that that's true. I'm just staying open-minded to that possibility. So we're going to get into Dogman today, specifically the cynocephalus. Now, some of you may have heard about the cynocephalus. These are the dog-headed men. They basically had lower half portion, neck down was more manlike, and the neck up was dog-like. And this is talked about in many different cultures: Egyptian, Indian, in Greece, in China. There's so many different depictions that they put out in their artwork that show these specific beings. And I just say being, but they're more akin to being human-like than anything. But there are specific stories, and we're going to talk about them today, about these tribes of dogmen. And there are explorers and writers and philosophers who interacted with these tribes too. So the characteristic of the cynocephali or cynocephalus, they have the head of a canid, typically that of a dog or jackal, and is widely attested mythical phenomenon existing in many different forms and contexts. The literal meaning of cynocephali is dog-headedness. However, this refers to a human body with a dog head as implied. So it's like I said, it's the neck up that's more of dog-like, but you will see in these depictions where their body even has very similar dog-like traits. They're just walking upright and their hands are even more human in how they operate. They just seem to be in this weird balance of a dog and a human. Now, we're talking about Egypt. You know, you could talk about Anubis, which was the god of the dead and had the head of a jackal or dog, which we could argue that that was either a fallen entity or some sort of Nephilim hybrid that was being worshipped as a dog. You know, we know that fallen entities can manifest differently depending on what they're trying to do. We know that the cherubim had four heads, one of an ox, one of a lion, one of an eagle, and one of a hominid. And it said that they could shapeshift into one of those specific forms depending on what they wanted to project to the people they were around. I've heard argued that they would shapeshift into one of these forms and then have sex with the daughters of men to create some sort of hybridized version of that animal. I don't know. It's definitely a possibility. I know some guys that are very deep researchers into the Nephilim realm, like Gary Wayne, who have suggested this before. And I definitely put it out there as a possibility. If we're going to give the credence to Nephilim in general, you got to open your mind up to the rest of it at that point, not just the fact that these giants were created. And the thing about Anubis is he ruled the city of Cynopolis, the city of dogs, where the dogs of the sun, dog priests, and dog kings resided. So here's this dog-headed god who rules Cynopolis. Sounds a lot like cynocephalus, and it's called the city of dogs. And there's all of these dog priests, dog kings, and it's suggested that they were hybrids, that they weren't just a metaphor for them having some sort of trait of a dog or characteristics of a dog in the way that they acted towards Anubis. Even in an ancient hymn to the god Amun-Ra, it is said that the gods gather as dogs around his feet. So we're here again with the dog imagery, these dog creatures who are worshiping these Egyptian gods, which could be suggested that these Egyptian gods were fallen entities and these were the hybrid children of them. Again, I'm down with it. And I think there's a portion of these dog men that are some sort of derivative of this Nephilim DNA splicing that fallen entities did in the past. Now, in addition, the Greeks and Romans called a species of apes cynocephalus, and it said they were suspected to be baboons. The only reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm about to get into some apocryphal text, and I wanted to show some similarities between the cynocephalus and apes, because I want to talk about hybrids being talked about in apocryphal texts. We do know biblically where hybrids are talked about as far as the Nephilim go. We know about the lion-like men of Moab as well, but we will get into some apocryphal texts today, specifically the book of Jasher, so you guys can get a deeper understanding of what some of these beings might be. And funny enough, the name Cynic is derived from the ancient Greek kynikos, meaning dog-like, in Kion, meaning dog. An ancient school of Greek philosophers were known as the Cynics. These philosophers rejected power or wealth for a very simple life, based on virtue and living in harmony with nature, free of all possessions. And this actually was a negative term thrown at some of these men that considered themselves Cynics, with these philosophers, because of their shameless rejection of conventional manners and their decision to live on the streets. So because they rejected this mainstream ideology that philosophy was trying to go down. They considered them basically dogs, but they actually flipped that term and started using it. And that's where our term cynic comes from. If someone's being cynical about something, that is where that term comes from. And that is the Greek derivative. So again, it means dog-like. So this plays into this whole cynocephalus, because you'll see a lot of these philosophers who were the ones that met with these cynocephalus, these dog-headed men. And back to this correlation between the dog-headed men and these fallen entities, you'll find this connection even in Freemasonry. You know, Manly P. Hall, who was a 33rd degree Freemason, said in The Secret Teachings of All Ages, the dog, because of its faithfulness, denotes the relationship which should exist between disciple and master, or between the initiate and his God. The shepherd dog was a type of priestcraft. The dog's ability to sense and follow unseen persons for miles symbolized a transcendental power by which the philosopher follows the thread of truth through the labyrinth of earthly error. The dog is also a symbol of Mercury, the dog star Sirius or Sothis, and was sacred to the Egyptians because it presaged the annual indignations of the Nile. So Manly P. Hall, 33rd degree Freemason, he was an author. He wrote plenty of esoteric books. He brings this connection between the dog, this disciple, and his master or his God. So this plays into that idea that this fallen angel, this God, creates this hybridized dog-headed man, which we just read in Egyptian culture would bow before the feet of Amun-Ra, which bowed before the feet of Anubis. So these are dog-headed gods who have dog men who worship them. So it seems like that Manly P. Hall understood that a little bit deeper than even just what he was telling us here. And I think you'll find this correlation between the cynocephalus and this possible interconnection between these fallen entities, highly possible. Now, I did talk about the Book of Jasher, and we will talk about a couple specific texts when you're talking about hybridized beings. But for some people who are like, the Book of Jasher, it's not in the canonical Bible, how are we supposed to give it any credence? You give it any credence like anything else you read. But I will say that the canonical Bible does reference the Book of Jasher a couple times. Joshua 10:13, so the sun still stood and the moon stopped until the nation took vengeance upon its enemies. Is it not written in the Book of Jasher? So the sun stopped in the middle of the sky and delayed going down about a full day. 2 Samuel 1:18. And he ordered that the sons of Judah be taught the song of the bow. It is written in the Book of Jasher. And I did quote that verse out of the Berean Standard, because the KJV actually uses the use of the bow. That's a slight mistranslation there. It should be song of the bow, because in the Book of Jasher, there is a song they used to sing before they go into battle called the song of the bow. So that is a more inline translation, and that's why I do like the Berean Standard Bible a lot, because they tend to pull from the Hebrew and Greek a little better when it comes to the Old and New Testament. It's just what I like personally when I read, but you're free to read whatever you like to read. But that's why I generally quote the Berean Standard Bible, and you may have heard me say before, go deeper like Bereans. And maybe I'll do a whole episode about the Bereans one day, which I really like those guys. They're pretty dope. So there is a couple of scriptural texts in the canonical Bible that quotes the Book of Jasher. So we do know that it holds some sort of meaning there. And I know people want to argue that the Book of Jasher should be in the Bible. I'm not here to argue either way with you guys. I have my own thoughts about what I think about the canonical Bible and the apocryphal text. I'll just say this. I don't think that the apocryphal text should just be thrown out and say that there's nothing good to them at all. I think that's absolutely ludicrous. That would be like saying every other mythology or every other religious text out there has nothing to it. I think there's a lot to offer when we look at every single type of text out there. I just will say this, for me personally, I try to have a deep relationship with God. So when I'm going through this stuff, that I'm able to sift through what I think lines up with what I believe and what I think doesn't. So just keep that in mind when you're reading through text. But that's your personal journey to go through, and it's not mine to tell you what that is. So we're going to talk about these descendants of Edom mixing with the creatures of Mount Seir, spawning human-animal hybrids. Jasher's retelling is clear that Mount Seir is where the half-animal, half-man dwells. Esau's descendants were cave dwellers and wanted to conquer the mountain and the land around it. However, the land was occupied by these quote-unquote Nephilim creatures. Esau initially conquered the beast, but later mixed with them sexually, causing an offspring of human-animal hybrids. This later laid the groundwork for the pantheon of deities found in Greco-Roman mythologies. And this also plays into the Edomites, who were descendants of Esau, the firstborn of Isaac and the twin brother of Jacob. And some people suggest that the Edomites are a version of Bigfoot, that Esau was kind of the first wild man, and his intermingling with these half animal, half men in this area of Edom created these Edomites that are what Bigfoot is now. I'll say this, I'm not sold on that idea totally. Again, I don't think that Bigfoot is just this big bad thing. I do think that there's a possibility that there's some that came from this Nephilim line, but I think there may have been some that have been around for a long time. And I will also say, just because you came from like a Nephilim line doesn't mean that you're inherently evil. Now, do you have some sort of draw to something evil because of your bloodline? Absolutely. I think you'll see that with people who have family trauma and generational trauma in their lives, that they are drawn to certain things because of their great, 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 great grandfather and all the way down. So I think it works the same way with bloodlines, but that doesn't mean that these things are inherently evil or that they stay evil or stay in an evil tribe. And again, I will be very soon doing a full in-depth review of good Nephilim and how I think that's possible. But I would say that's possible with any of these hybrids. We can't just sit there and say, well, I know this is what it is, but you don't. Like, you could point out to me scripture and I could literally point out other scripture that'll show you the antithesis of that. That's the beauty of digging into theology and digging through these texts. At the end of the day, none of us know. And to suggest that you have it figured out is ludicrous. It would be ludicrous for me to suggest to you that I have it all figured out. But back to these Edomites, that's kind of the idea, that at least some of these Edomites are the intermingling of Esau and these half animal, half men hybrids created this version of Bigfoot and many other things to come out of it. Now, you're probably asking, where in the book of Jasher does it talk about these hybrids? I'm going to show you. So we're going to go to the book of Jasher, chapter 36. We'll start with verse 26. And these are the names of the sons of Seir the Horite, inhabitants of the land of Seir: Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anna, Dishon, Ezer, and Dishon being seven sons. So Seir, we don't know his ancestry. It's not specified. Some say Seir lived around the time of Terah, father of Abraham. It's also suggested that he's a descendant of Hor, who was supposed to have lived around the time of Reu and was a descendant of Hivi, son of Canaan, son of Ham. So that would kind of make sense, that whole cursed bloodline there. But nobody really knows. We just know that Seir the Horite's here, and we got this Mount Seir. And in this area, there are these weird hybrids. Now, we'll talk specifically about his son, Anna, and we'll start at verse 28. And it says, and the sons of Zibeon were Aja and Anna. This was that Anna who found the Yemim in the wilderness when he fed the asses of Zibeon, his father. And whilst he was feeding his father's asses, he led them to the wilderness at different times to feed them. And there was a day that he brought them to one of the deserts of the seashore opposite the wilderness of the people. And whilst he was feeding them, behold, a very heavy storm came from the other side of the sea and rested upon the asses that were feeding there. And they all stood still. And afterwards, about 120 great and terrible animals came out from the wilderness at the other side of the sea, and they all came to the place where the asses were, and they placed themselves there. And those animals from the middle downward were in the shape of the children of men, and from the middle upward had the likeness of bears, and some the likeness of Kephas, which is K-E-E-P-H-S, which is a Hebrew word, which we do not know the meaning of that, which means it's some sort of hybrid creature. It actually resembles the Hebrew word for ape, which is Kofi, K-O-F-E, which when you see it spelled out in Hebrew, Q-O-P-H, but the phonetic spelling is K-O-F-E. It means an ape, which kind of makes me think, here we are with these creatures that are very Bigfoot-like, and we know that Esau was there with his family intermingling with these creatures. And it says, with tails behind them from between their shoulders reaching down to the earth, like the tails of the Duchepath. Now, Duchepath is D-U-C-H-E-E-P-H-A-T-H. That is another Hebrew word that we're not meaning for. This is a different hybrid that's there. So we don't know exactly what they look like, but they are different from these Kephas. So we've got two different types of hybrids that are talked about right here in the book of Jasher. And it says these animals came and mounted and rode upon these asses and led them away. And they went away unto this day. And one of these animals approached Anna and smote him with his tail and then fled from that place. So Anna ends up living and he runs back and he's scared and he talks to his brothers and they all fear for their lives. But interestingly enough, they knew how to ride horses or asses. They attacked with their tails, which I think is pretty crazy too. All this is very interesting, but here are these hybrids talked about in this extra canonical text of Jasher. Now, interestingly enough, the description of these, there was a stone that was found in El Bal, Guatemala, which seems to match up with what these creatures look like. So this is very interesting. So a stela is a standing stone slab used in the ancient world primarily as a grave marker, but also for dedication, commemoration, and demarcation. Although the origin of the stela is unknown, a stone slab, either decorated or undecorated, was commonly used as a tombstone, both in the East and in Grecian lands. So interestingly enough, here in Guatemala, here's this basically a gravestone marker that's found in a place the world is not supposed to be at. Right, it's more in line with where these creatures in the book of Jasher are found. And that's what really set some alarms off for the people that found it. And in the stela, it shows a bare-chested, non-muscular frame of a male. His bare head looks like a helmet. It even looks like an eye hole showing a smaller eye inside. This bear-shaped head covering is connected to an apparatus around his neck, which is connected to a tube-shaped object and a box of some kind. Is it a breathing apparatus? Could this tube be called a tail to someone who had never seen a tube? It is missing the link to be considered a tail, but we're not given clear view of what is behind him, except the legs of his victim tripping behind him. Down behind his left knee, there is a tube shape, but it is cut off by the stela itself. Could this be part of the tail? So the people that looked into this are suggesting that these creatures were some sort of hybrid, but had some sort of technology on them. Was this tail that whipped Anna some sort of technology that he couldn't quite describe, that he thought it was some sort of tail? It's possible. We're talking about Nephilim technology. We're talking about the existence of fallen entities who have given technology to not only man, but obviously their sons and daughters and any of the other hybrids they may have created. Why wouldn't they give this bear-shaped, according to the book of Jasher, these Kephas, some sort of technology to go along with it? I don't know. It's a possibility. And if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, you've seen the picture that I've thrown up. Try to figure out the best way you can. You know, I don't know. I do think that if we're going to give the idea of these fallen entities giving us technology, why wouldn't they do it also to these half fallen entity, half animal hybrids? Now, we'll look at one more portion of Jasher just to talk about where the book of Jasher talks about these animal human hybrids. Jasher 61, verse 5, and Zepho, the son of Eliphaz, the son of Esau, captain of the host to the Angeas king of Dinhabah, was still daily enticing Angeas to prepare for battle to fight with the sons of Jacob in Egypt. And Angeas was unwilling to do this thing, for his servants had related to him all the might of the sons of Jacob, what they had done unto them in their battle with the children of Esau. So here we go again. Esau's mixed up, at least his bloodline's mixed up with these hybrids. So it's not a stretch to think that Esau's line has created, I wouldn't say just that type of Bigfoot, but other types of cryptids too. He was clearly in a land full of these animal-human hybrids or fallen entity hybrids. Now we'll jump to verse 14. And it was one day that Zepho lost a young heifer, and he went to seek it, and he heard it lowing round about the mountain. And Zepho went, and he saw, and behold, there was a large cave at the bottom of the mountain. There was a great stone there at the entrance of the cave. And Zepho split the stone, and he came into the cave and looked, and behold, a large animal was devouring the ox. Here we go again. From the middle upward, it resembled a man, and from the middle downward, it resembled an animal. And Zepho rose up against the animal and slew it with his swords. And the inhabitants of Chittim heard of this thing, and they rejoiced exceedingly and said, "What shall we do unto this man who has slain this animal that devoured our cattle?" And they all assembled to consecrate one day in the year to him, and they called the name thereof Zepho after his name. They brought in him drink offerings year after year on that day, and they brought unto him gifts. Now, I thought it was interesting. This one was a little reversed, where the upper half was that of a man and the lower half was that of an animal. And they don't specify what kind of animal. And I mean, we could, there's tons in mythology. We could look at the fawn, which is half human, half goat, which is the lower half. We could talk about centaurs, which are upper body of a human, lower half of a horse, the Khepri, dung beetle headed Egyptian god. We got Kanara, half human, half bird. We got Kerma, upper half human, lower half tortoise. So many different ones that we could go down the list of. But I did think that was interesting here again in the book of Jasher, which has been spoken about in the canonical Bible as well, or talking about these hybrids. And it does suggest that these hybrids are from these fallen entities. Now, you may say, well, none of these are the dog-headed men or the cynocephalus. And you're right, outside of the fact that we don't know what that one type was in the book of Jasher, the Duchipath. But again, maybe that was one of the dog men, or maybe it was a different type. But what I'm here to show you is that even in these apocryphal texts that are connected to the Bible, these types of hybrids are talked about. And I think this does play into this cynocephalus. Now, one of the first times these cynocephalus are talked about, the great historian Pliny located a race of dog men, the Canari or Caniceps, in Western Africa. Now, Pliny the Elder was a Roman author, naturalist, natural philosopher, and naval and army commander of the early Roman Empire, and friend of the Emperor Vespasian. He wrote the encyclopedic Naturalis Historia, which became an editorial model for encyclopedias. He spent most of his spare time studying, writing, and investigating natural and geographic phenomena in the field. So listen, this guy was not only a writer, but he was an explorer, and he was a naval and army commander. So I just don't think that Pliny the Elder is running around telling lies about tribes of dog-headed men that he connected with in the past. The guy, from all accounts, seems pretty legit, unless he just wanted to make up a nasty joke that he hoped people thousands of years later would see and believe. I just don't think so. Now, I mentioned that Pliny located a race of dogmen, the Canari, in Western Africa. His location of these people in the West, in fact, goes back to another ancient tradition. The Canary Canine Islands off the west coast of Africa were identified as the location of both the Garden of Hesperides, which some people connect to the Garden of Eden, and a land of the Blessed Dead from at least the first century BC down through the Middle Ages. And you can also connect Hesperides, because they were the daughters of the evening, Hespera, or of the evening star Hesperos, and it was into this red land of sunset and death that Hercules descended in order to win the apples of immortality. And the only reason I brought that up, it's weird that you've got where the Garden of Hesperides, or a version of the Garden of Eden, is in these Canary Canine Islands, where it's suggested that these dog-headed men were in the area of where Pliny the Elder said they were, and then you've got the story of Hercules, and from all accounts, Hercules is a Nephilim giant. I think we kind of know that by now. His whole backstory, you know, he's a demigod, so he would be considered a Nephilim. So here we go. We've got these Nephilim dog-headed men, and here we go. We've got this Nephilim story originating out of the same area. Very interesting. Now, the thing about the cynocephalus is, to some people, it sounds like some sort of mythological creature. The only problem is there were reports that came from famous explorers like Christopher Columbus and Marco Polo that actually talked about meeting them. And not only that, these Greek physicians and philosophers would have these huge interactions with them too. So were all these people lying throughout history? I mean, unless they're using dog-headed as a metaphor, which I don't think, because it's too many long gaps between all these different explorers and philosophers. We're talking 1,500 years. We're talking hundreds of years. This wasn't during the same era of time. So you've got the same archetype that shows up constantly, the same cryptid that shows up constantly between all of these different men. And I will talk about some of their stories now. We'll start with the Greek physician Ctesias. Now, he was around 400 BC, and he wrote the following passages, and he describes the tribes of cynocephalus. And I'm going to read some of this because I think it's really interesting. He said, "They speak no language but bark like dogs, and in this manner make themselves understood by each other. Their teeth are larger than those of dogs, their nails like those of these animals, but longer and rounder. They inhabit the mountains as far as the river Indus." So this is in India. "They are reported to live primarily in India and northern Africa, but were seen in many places in between." So he's saying, not only have I seen them, but anybody I've talked to that's seen them has seen them all over the place. So they weren't in just one specific area. He said, "Their complexion is swarthy. They are extremely just, like the rest of the Indians with whom they associate." So it's said that these cynocephalus actually bartered and traded with the people from India that were close by the mountains. So they would go into town, or the Indians would come there, and they would barter and trade. And he said they were extremely just. They were good natured. And he said that he basically went and stayed with them for a while. And he said they lived on raw meat, and they numbered about 120,000 in the mountains. That is crazy to think about, that many were living in the mountains at the time. Now, you may wonder, like, well, why aren't we seeing them now? Well, as time went, and as the religious factions of the church became more militant, and we're not talking about just one specific type of church or religion, but all these different religions and churches became more militant, you will see throughout history where they would wipe out what they thought was demonic in any area they were at. We've heard about the trolls in Iceland being wiped out. We've heard about all of these other creatures that have been wiped out by the church. And you will see in text and even in stained glass depictions where they were considered demonic and were driven out or killed in large numbers. So that could be why we don't know about these 120,000 dogmen or cynocephalus that live close to India and in northern Africa. At least that's what I think could have happened throughout history. And sadly, here we go with Ctesias talking about how good-natured they were, but here is man again wiping out what they don't understand. And this also plays back into this good Nephilim theory of mine, that I don't think that they are all inherently evil. I think we all have the ability to make decisions for ourselves, and I don't think that God holds it against us, like who DNA splices or put us together. I think that would be ludicrous. And I know there are Christians that will want to fight me over saying that because God didn't create them. Well, they came from God partially, because if they're half man or half animal, God created that part of them. So you're telling me that God's like, well, no, you're all screwed. That's my personal opinion. I don't believe that to be true. But if you do, that's your opinion. Now, Tesius says the cynocephali living in the mountains do not practice any trade but live by hunting. When they have killed an animal, they roast it in the sun. They also rear numbers of sheep, goats, and asses, drinking the milk of the sheep and whey from it. They eat the fruit of the Cyptocora, whence amber is produced since it is sweet. They also dry it and keep it in baskets, as the Greeks keep their dried grapes. They make rafts, which they load from this fruit together with well-cleaned purple flowers and 260 talents of amber, with the same quantity of the purple dye and 1,000 additional talents of amber, which they send annually to the king of India. So again, they were sending stuff to the king of India, basically as a gift, and they coexisted together. This was well known. They exchanged the rest for bread, flour, and cotton stuffs with the Indians. So like I said, they traded with the Indians. They were in constant contact with the Indians, from whom they also buy swords for hunting wild beasts, bows and arrows, being very skillful in drawing the bow and hurling the spear. So they operate very human-like in a lot of the things that they do. They cannot be defeated in war, since they inhabit lofty and inaccessible mountains. Every 5 years, the king sends them a present of 300,000 bows, as many spears, 120,000 shields, and 50,000 swords. It's wild. So the king wants them to be on his side. He does not want to make enemies out of these cynocephalus, these dog men. Now, Tesius says they do not live in houses, but in caves. They set out for the chase with bows and spears, as they are very swift of foot. They pursue and soon overtake their quarry. The women have a bath once a month. The men do not have a bath at all, but only wash their hands. So I'm sure they stink. I'm sure they stink like nasty dog, and maybe that's where the term originally came from. They anoint themselves 3 times a month with oil made from milk and wipe themselves with skins. The clothes of men and women alike are not skins with the hair on, but skins tanned and very fine. The richest wear linen clothes, but they are few in number. They have no beds, but sleep on leaves or grass. He who possesses the greatest number of sheep is considered the richest, and so in regard to the other possessions. All, both men and women, have tails above their hips like dogs, but longer and more hairy. So this does kind of play in into the dog men that people see, because they are said to have tails. And maybe this is that connection, right, to the Duchy path, because it was talked about. Their tails were long and they used them as weapons. You know, I said earlier the possibility maybe it was a piece of technology. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was a dog man. He's got a super strong tail and he used it as a whip, maybe in conjunction with technology. Who knows, right? We don't know at all. We're just theorizing on what it could be. But we do know from Tesius, they are very smart. They know how to communicate. They know how to trade. They know how to hunt. And they lived in pretty large numbers in the mountains. And lastly, Tesius said that they live longer than any other man, 170, sometimes to 200 years old. So these dogmen, if we want to suggest even in North America, some of the dogmen are a derivative of these cynocephalus, they could be living for a long time if they're of these particular bloodlines. And that may be why these tribes are very close-knit and have a cultural system that has been around for ages. So now we're going to jump to Herodotus, who is a Greek historian and geographer from the Greek city of Halicarnassus, part of the Persian Empire. He is known for having written the Histories, a detailed account of Greco-Persian wars. Herodotus was the first writer to perform systematic investigation of historical events. He is referred to as the father of history, a title conferred on him by the ancient Roman orator Cicero. So here we go with another historian, someone who was well-regarded. And he said that he traveled to the eastern region of Libya and described these nomads that lived there. And he said it was exceedingly mountainous and wooded and full of wild beasts, naming many of these and among them cynocephali. He said that they were dog-headed men. And this is during the same time as Tesius, the same century as Tesius. So here are two very early accounts of these cynocephalus. And listen, Herodotus is known for talking about seeing a lot of strange things, especially in Libya, where he saw not only the cynocephali, but also the acephali, the headless men whose eyes are in their chest. And these would be considered, if you've never heard of them, the blemmies. They are described as lacking a head with their facial features on their chest. These were first described as inhabitants of Libya or the Nile, and later traditions confined their habitat to a particular island in Brisbane River and shifted to India. So these acephali or blemmies, Ctesias also ran up on, but these weren't the only creatures that he saw. He saw many other creatures on his journeys, which we won't get into today. I'm going to try to keep it in the pocket with the cynocephalus or dog men today, even though I have jumped around a little bit to give you some backstory about what I think about these dog men. Our next story is from Claudius Ellion, and he was a Roman author and teacher of rhetoric, and this was around 222 BC. He spoke Greek so fluently that he was called honey-tongued. He was Roman-born, but he preferred Greek authors and wrote in a slightly Arcasian Greek himself. So he pretty much considered himself Greek, even though he wasn't actually Greek. He was Roman. Now, he actually talked about the accounts of these cynocephalus in the Libyan region too. He described the cynocephalus as being upright, would injure no man, and that they had no speech. However, they would howl, and of course, they understood the Indian language. He claimed that wild animals were their food and that they would catch them with ease, exposing them to the sun's heat to cook them after shredding them into pieces. Funny enough, I know that's true because a long time ago, I was talking to a guy, a friend of mine, and he had went to Texas and his buddy owned a ranch down there. And one of the cows got stuck in the mud and they couldn't get the cow out. Cow just basically was going to die there. So he killed a cow there. And he said he cut some of the meat off and it was so hot that day that the meat itself was cooking in the sun. So he was basically eating the meat like rare or medium rare out in the sun. So I just want to throw it out there because that's like a personal story of mine that I know about this stuff. So here's the cynocephalus cooking this raw meat in the sun because it was so hot. Now, Claudius noted that they kept goats and sheep and drank the milk of the animals they herded. He said their speech was inarticulate, unintelligible, and that not of a man. So this is very similar to what we've heard prior, that they use their own language of barking or howling, but yet they didn't speak English. However, they could understand Indian English, whatever language that they were bartering with, they understood it. So I think that is fascinating. He did say their whole body was covered in hair and that the regions where they lived were so inaccessible, it was hard to capture them. So maybe this is another reason why that when these, for lack of a better word, holy wars against these hybrids happened throughout the years from the different types of religions and churches, that they just learned how to hide better, that they went more underground. Maybe this is why we see them coming more out of cave systems and things now. Maybe that's why they spilled out more over here in North America. You know, we don't know how deep these cave systems go. We don't know how it's all interconnected worldwide. All these different possibilities are there just for the taking. But I do find it fascinating that he said that they were very hard to capture. Now, he did say that he found it interesting that the cynocephalus would drink wine and preferred well-seasoned food. So they had some sort of culture to them. They're drinking wine, having a nice steak, you know, just like a human being would. So they definitely had some sort of high intelligence to them, and it wasn't like they were some mindless beasts running around. However, I think some of these cryptids could be some sort of mindless beasts running around, depending on what type that they could be, right? Again, back to, I think when you're looking at a specific cryptid, there could be five or six different versions of that cryptid. So it depends on what version you're running up on. It said that King Arthur even spoke about defeating a band of dog-headed soldiers in the mountains surrounding Edinburgh, Scotland. Now, some people question whether King Arthur was really real or not, but a lot of historians speculate that he was actually a real warrior who led British armies against Saxon invaders in the 6th century. So we don't know for sure if King Arthur was a real person or not. But if we're suggesting that he is, then he also fought a band of dog-headed men as a part of his journeys. Now, one of the most famous stories of the cynocephalus is St. Christopher. He is described in several texts as having the body of a man but the head of a dog. Not only that, but originally the future saint was said to have been a wild and fierce warrior who was captured in battle. Not only was this creature a very large man with a dog's head, but came from a warrior tribe of dog-headed men who looked similar to him. Now, you may have seen paintings of St. Christopher. He was considered a saint in the Christian church. You may be like, well, how'd that happen? According to Christian mythology, he eventually met Jesus Christ. So this was during Jesus's time on earth. He met Jesus. He learned the error of his former ways. He repented and became baptized and eventually received sainthood and the gift of a human appearance. So now I want to put the caveat there. That's depending on some stories of him. Other stories of him, he still had the dog head. So that's a disparity there, because most historical images show him as having the dog head, don't show him as having a human head, even in his sainthood. So that is super interesting. And right there, if we want to take that story as having even a modicum of truth, there's your answer. There's your answer to hybrid Nephilim being able to be redeemed. Because the story is that Saint Christopher met with Jesus, learned the error of his ways, and repented, and became a saint. So, at least historically and in some version of mythology, that it is possible. Now, Saint Augustine of Hippo has a very interesting story as well. He was a theologian and philosopher of Berber origin and the bishop of the Hippo Regis in Roman North Africa. His writings influenced the development of Western philosophy and Western Christianity. He lived in 430, and he's one of the most influential early Christian fathers. Now, this is crazy. He spoke of the existence of the cynocephali and other strange races, claiming that he personally preached the gospel to them. Now, his account said that they were morally dumb and sometimes even demonic, but always redeemable. So here we go with another saint, another person of the Christian faith who has said that these creatures are redeemable. Now, I'm just going to throw this out there. If these dog men are redeemable, then I would think that giants would be redeemable as well. If we're going to consider that they all come from the same line, at least some versions of them, right? And I can't wait to do the Good Nephilim episodes, because there will probably be more than one on this channel very soon. I've got a ton of info since the last time I did that on the confessionals. But if you're just itching to hear what I have to say about it, just go to the confessionals. And I did an episode last December where I took over the show for Tony. He was doing stuff with the family for a couple weeks, and it's called Good Nephilim. So go look it up. But I've got more info since then, and I can't wait to share it with you guys. But if we're considering these cynocephalus to be this version, which I think maybe these cynocephalus themselves are some sort of derivative of these fallen entities because of all the texts I've read to you today, it says they're redeemable. Now, we got some high-level explorers coming up. Marco Polo, the great explorer, mentions cynocephali indirectly while describing his travels to the island of Angamanium off the coast of Burma in the Indian Ocean. So, close to India, we're typically seeing that in this lower western portion of Africa, India, the surrounding areas. This is where you're typically seeing these cynocephalus. He says, Agamemnon is a very large island. The people are without a king and are idolaters and no better than wild beasts. And I assure you, all the men of this island of Agamemnon have heads like dogs and teeth and eyes likewise. In fact, in the face, they are all just like big mastiff dogs. They have a quantity of spices, but they are a most cruel generation and eat everybody they can catch, if not of their own race. I don't know, Marco Polo, you don't have like the best record when it comes to like rolling up on islands historically. I will say that if you come in aggressive on a tribe of people, they're probably going to be aggressive back. Marco Polo is known for being aggressive. So yeah, these dog-headed men were probably going ape on you. Literally, ape on you, because of the way that you rolled through there. And I think this might have been around that time period where we were seeing them either going deeper underground, into hiding, or getting wiped out. Because, you know, we don't know what happened to this small but powerful race. Now, like I said before, when empires expand, they could have been killed off, right? I do think that we got to look at the church, religion as a whole, that looked at these things as demonic, so they were going in trying to wipe them out. They were a warring tribe, so these dogmen were not scared of a fight and probably preferred death in battle to succumbing to another's ways. So instead of becoming your slave and becoming some sort of circus attraction, they were just willing to die. And I think that probably what you see. Now, it's suggested that they're still living in cave systems to this day and maybe rebuilding their empire underground. It's highly possible. To another infamous explorer, Christopher Columbus. Now, Columbus said in the 15th century, he arrived in Haiti to an unwelcoming and hostile situation. He claimed to see men with one eye and others with dog noses who were cannibals, and that when they captured an enemy, they beheaded them, drank his blood, and cut off his private parts. Christopher Columbus is kind of sordid. He's a sordid character, and I think there's a lot about him we don't know. There's a crazy connection with him and the Moors. I know people want to point to that most of the sailors that worked with him were Moors. There is even suggestion that Christopher Columbus himself could have been a Moor, and this is not to talk about today, and I know suggesting that would get people 0 to 60 on the anger scale, because that would change the narrative that's being spilled out across the mainstream globally about who Christopher Columbus actually was and what he was doing to indigenous people. I'm not saying that he didn't do these things. I think he did, but I think his background story is different than what they want us to know. And I think one day I will do an episode, not specifically about him, but about the Moors and what their legacy might have been on North America. But Christopher Columbus is an interesting character. Now, he says men with one eye, others with dog noses who are cannibals. I know some people would say, well, yeah, he dehumanized people. So when he would go to an island, he would just say these things in an attempt to wipe them out. That's possible. I'm not going to throw that out as a possibility. But I will say he wasn't shy about killing people in general, just for being people. So why would he add this extra layer of one eye and dog noses having certain traits that weren't human? He had no problem killing people and saying that he was killing people. He would just say they were cannibals. He wouldn't talk about what they look like. So I think we got to put it out there as a possibility that what he saw there in Haiti at the time may have been some sort of version of cynocephalus or some sort of hybrid that he saw there. And he's already ready to kill anybody regardless, even if they're coming to him with peace. So he would probably be extra heightened, ready to go if he saw some hybrids rolling up on him when he hits the beach. So our last story comes from Eratmus from Corbie, who died in 868 AD. He was a Frankish monk of the monastery of Corbie near Amiens in northern France. He was a theologian known best for his writings on the Eucharist and predestination. Now, he is revered in the Christian church for a lot of his doctrine and theology. But here's a guy that's highly revered in the Christian church. And guess who he's talking about? Cynocephalus. And this is like one of these lesser known accounts because, you know, the mainstream Christian church like to bury a lot of this stuff because they think it makes them look bad instead of putting it out there as an actuality that we can look to and say this is a part of history. Why is this being covered up? But this is very interesting. So one of the monks came to Ratnus and asked him, "What do I do when I encounter the dog heads? Can I save their souls? Do I preach to them or do I look at them as animals?" The church clearly claimed they were beasts. Now, Ratnus was concerned and consulted his elder in a letter on the dog-headed creatures. And he actually tried to persuade his superior that the dog heads were in fact sons of Adam and that they should be allowed to convert to Christianity and not treated as animals. So here's one of the most revered people to this day in the Christian church who was saying that they were in fact sons of Adam. They came from the bloodline of Adam, which I'm always arguing when it comes to Nephilim. They did. Half of them did. So any of these creatures that come from this you know, bloodline, if they intermingled with humans in any way, came from Adam. They were sons of Adam. So you've got Ratramus telling his superiors in the church that they are not to be treated as animals. They have intelligence, and we need to allow them to convert if they want to. And I think that's where I'm going to end it today. I think it's a good place to end it on the fact that I think that something with intelligence can always be redeemed, no matter where you came from. I think it's absolutely possible. The possibilities of God's love and grace are endless. And people that tell you that it's not, or try to condemn people all the time, do not listen to them. Don't, because their ideology and viewpoint is narrow, so narrow that, and these are these people that I talk about on the show all the time, that live their lives in fear, look for the devil behind every bush, throw missiles at everyone else but themselves. And we need to, as people, be better than that. And if you're a Christian, please be better than that, because there's too many that are out there putting a bad name on what this was all supposed to be from the beginning. It wasn't supposed to be some church structure of all these different rituals and blockades to get to God. No, it's supposed to be for all of us. And on that note, I'm going to end this episode with a verse. It is Mark 16:15. And he said to them, Jesus, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And it's every man, every creature. Well, let that sink in. Guys, I had a blast today. I do every week with you guys, and you guys have really been helping this show grow. I am actually blown away with how much this show's grown in about 3 months, and I can only imagine what it's going to look like in a year, 2 years. You guys are always awesome. Thank you so much. If you can right now, whatever platform you're listening to this on, if you're on Apple Podcasts, please go give a 5-star review. If you have time, please write a review too, because that always helps. All this stuff helps drive the algorithm up, so more people who haven't heard about the show get access to the show. If you're on Spotify, please go give a 5-star review right now while you're listening. If you're on any other platform, give a review, give a 5-star. If you're on YouTube or Rumble, go write a comment, share the show, like, subscribe, and share. I just said that, but share the show. That's the best way for this to get out. I really appreciate you guys, and you know how I do at the end of every week. I read a few reviews, and I'm going to do the same thing this week. All right, guys, we're going to start with Apple Podcasts today. We've got Noise 13, exactly what I've been searching. Was introduced to Joel through Tony's show, and is exactly what I've been searching for. Exploring these subjects while relating them to God and biblical events hits on so many levels. Keep killing it with your podcast and music. Truly something special. Thank you, Noise. I hope you're bringing the noise everywhere you go. Make sure you're sharing the show. I'm sure you are. We've got Tank 20 LXA, Free Your Mind. Very thorough and entertaining podcast. Topics are researched and presented in a way that allows my mind to follow along. Love the podcast. Thank you, Tank. I really appreciate it. We've got CAD Trainer. My head hurts. This is a fantastic show. It is cerebral roller coaster, and I appreciate how the host presents his research without stepping on the toes of people with opposing views. Definitely will continue listening and keeping my feet in the grass. All right, we're going to jump to Spotify. Just remember, if you send something to me on Spotify, I do see it. It doesn't register where you can see it, but I see all the stuff that comes through. We got Nicholas Van Gorder. Ton of fire emojis. And by the way, I know Nicholas Van Gorder, and he is a part of the new film that we just did. He had a mind-blowing interview, which I thought was absolutely great, 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 great. And I really appreciate his take on what he thinks some of this stuff is. And I can't wait for you guys to see the film. We've got Thin Man 72069. You said that premillennial view is a new doctrine, 1800s, and that's demonstrably incorrect. I highly recommend you look into Papias Hierapolis and Phrynaeus, 1st and 2nd century, who had direct ties to the Apostle John via his disciple Polycarp. Also, see Justin Martyr and John Napier. Amillennialism and preterism was introduced to the church through Roman church in the 2nd and 3rd century, as well as many other ideas that many Christians cling to without being aware of their origins. I appreciate you, Thin Man. Hey, you can totally disagree with what I got to say. I will say this, though, a little rebuttal. I wasn't talking about premillennial view. That's not at all what I brought up. I'm talking about pre-tribulation. It's two different things. And secondly, just like I always say, there's an antithesis to every theology or doctrine, there is an antithesis to everything you just said there. Just like if I say something, somebody can bring an antithesis to me. They can show me this line of thinking and verses and say, well, no, this doesn't add up the same way that this theology does. I'm not suggesting that I have it figured out when it comes to post-millennial, pre-millennial, pre-trib, post-trib at all. I'm just looking into all the variables there, and I'm finding that there are good arguments for all of it, essentially. My argument was that we don't need to live in fear as some sort of premillennialist or pre-trib people like I see most of them doing. But again, you've been a great listener of the show, and you've sent some other comments that are great, and I don't take this in any kind of bad way. I like it when people send their ideas of what they think too. And some of what you just said there, I have looked into. And frankly, I could show the antithesis of those things you just said. But again, I'm not here to tell you what to believe on that front. I don't think it really matters. I think that ultimately we just need to live our lives for Christ in a way that betters the world, and not live like it's ending tomorrow or 2030 or whatever new goalposts that the pre-trib people are setting for us, right? And I'm not saying that I'm against pre-trib. All what I am saying is that I don't think anybody's got that figured out. I think, again, I've seen theologists on both sides of the table and in between present their arguments. They make good arguments, and I'm not set exactly on what I think about all of it because I'm exploring some other ideas that are even outside of those. So appreciate that. Again, not mad at all. I like when people write in what they think about what I'm talking about. And lastly, we're going to go to YouTube. We've got Mama Kitty 2399, Joel Thomas, let me be clear, I love the show. So much knowledge. I've been watching a Netflix series just this week, and in it is two characters that my ignorant self thought were just characters, Edward Kelly and John Dee. Mouth dropped when you mentioned their names. Coincidence? I think not. Your show is such an interesting show as always. My daughters and I wait to listen together so we can discuss afterwards. Love it. Love your input to the conversation. Great, great, great work you're doing. Appreciate that, Mama Kitty. Appreciate it. Mama Kitty's kitties, which would be your daughters. I appreciate you guys listening to the show. Love all you guys. You guys are great. We've got Eric Ogle 319, another heater with the flame emoji. Appreciate that. We've got Robin Bowser 6596. Love the show. I love your like-minded point of view and the investigation of both sides in order to get an accurate stance on a subject. Amazing job, Joel, and I pray for you and your family's health, strength, protection, and happiness. In Jesus' mighty name, amen. Appreciate that, Robin. And same goes to you as well. Guys, I had a blast this week. Love you all. Can't wait to see you next week. We've got a ton of stuff in the works. And we're going to end this week on one of my songs, Pulp. And you know what it is, guys. Go outside, touch grass, and get your tail out the hole.
Subconscious looming, all of my thoughts consuming, laying with death like I'm spooning, everything I'm chasing, eluding me. This prison awaits, I can't find escape, cause I wanna taste the chain.
Wanna know what the definition of a sorry is? Everything I'm chasing out of reach like Shatari ships. I feel when people say they feel me, they just say they do. Tentacles of praise turning into calamari soup. A little stretch every song I bleed. Just a little recognition is all I need. And God, I'm feeling growth, but every time I look inside, I'm looking at the branches of a bonsai tree. And I don't know what I'ma leave when I leave here, cause the mic's just become a pair of sheep shears. And I'm fighting for change, but legacy's important too, scrambling for more days, more leap years. Feeling like a mega block around some Lego, in a chamber of my own thoughts, my own echoes. Lows never seem to hit the falsetto. Is it wrong for me to judge myself on what I've done or where I'm going? Yeah. Is it wrong for me to see what I'm going to be and where I'm going? Yeah. Is it just worth a squeeze? Or am I left with a pause? Part of the healing, ayy. Leave you with nothing concealing, ayy. Most of us run from affliction, to some of us it's an addiction. The way that the rays from the sun keep coming up missing.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.